Resources meeting to order. In attendance, we have Representatives Elkin, Seaton, Co-Chairs Samuels and Rammers, and Representative Capsner. First on the agenda today, we're going to take up HCR 2. It is a resolution urging the governor to take quick action to comply with a FERC order regarding in-state natural gas needs and to have a study done on that. In attendance, we also have Representative Olson. So first up, I'd like my staff, Henry Webb, to present.
For the record, my name is Henry Webb, staff to Representative Samuels. Very shortly, this resolution is a result of the FERC hearing that came out February 9th, and that ruling requires a study of in-state needs for gas to be conducted by an agency of the state. Before an open season can occur, this study needs to be done, and the resolution just simply states the support of the governor doing this in a timely fashion.
Okay, thank you. Is there anybody in the audience who wants to testify on HCR 2? We'll go online. We've got Lisa Parker from Kenai from Agrium. Lisa, are you on there?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am.
Yeah, and you wanted to testify on HCR 2?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I did. Again, my name is Lisa Parker, and I'm with Agrium. A couple of weeks ago, we were here and testified before the House and Senate Resources Committee that was held here on the Kenai Peninsula and urged the committee to look at the use of value-added industries and the importance of them. We've also expressed an opinion to the state of Alaska and recommended that they issue an expression of interest regarding the purchase of North Slope natural gas, which I believe this resolution could also get to. I think it is important for us as a state to consider value-added industries in the state if we want to continue to sustain our economy and grow. That is the end of my testimony, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you very much. Is there anybody else online who wants to testify? Are there any questions? Boy, this is the way to run a meeting here. You have a motion? Question, Representative Rammers.
Just keep learning from you, Mr. Co-Chair. You know how to move an issue right through committee. I wish you would coach me before we meet on the lands bill next
you get
time.
You get pesticides and lands, and I get in-state gas.
It's time to go to breakfast again, Mr. Co-Chair. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. No. I'd like to move HCR 2, please, with individual recommendations, and there is no fiscal note.
There is no fiscal note. Is there any objection to that? Hearing none, HCR 2 is moved. I will be checking and on the floor, if it's possible, I'll have to check with the procedural and see if we can make this a resources bill, because it shouldn't really come from an individual. And if I cannot do that, I'll be making a motion on the floor to have all members shown as co-sponsors of the bill, because it affects all of the districts in the state, I believe. So I will be working on that and doing my homework before this gets to the floor. Okay, so we're through with HCR 2, and I'll pass the gavel over. Can you do pesticides?
Yes, sir. All right, where are we at here? We're going to take up HB 19, which is pesticide and broadcast chemicals. We're going to try and do it as expediently as we just passed HCR 2. Who's going to offer initial testimony on this?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Michael Pawlowski. Representative Meyer is on his way down the stairs right now. If the committee wishes, I could begin, or I would offer that he will be here in just a minute.
We'll take an at ease, brief at ease. Recognize that Representative Ledoux has joined us, as has our esteemed colleague, Representative Gatto. And we're going to take up HB 19. And Representative Meyer, the floor is yours, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Before you is House Bill 19, and I think the best place to start on House Bill 19 is to tell you there's four different sections to this bill. And the first part just simply gives DEC the authority to charge a fee to manufacturers who register the pesticides or broadcast chemicals for sale and distribution in Alaska. Every state in the nation already requires, or every state in the nation requires chemical companies to register their chemicals. Only the state of Alaska does not charge for that. In my opinion, it's a fairness issue here. The chemical companies are used to paying a fee for registering their products in all the other 49 states. And they should do it also in Alaska, because it does cost us some every time they register. And you'll hear from DEC as to the impact and the cost to them to do this. We're not setting a particular fee. We're just saying what the maximum amount should be. This allows some flexibility. So if a chemical company says, well, gosh, we hardly sell any of those pesticides in Alaska, I don't think we're going to pay the fee, this allows DEC then to adjust the fee accordingly, depending on the sales. Section 6 contains two other important provisions to this bill. First part requires a person who applies the pesticides or the broadcast chemicals in a public place, and I think that's the key word, is a public place. It's not have anything to do with your private property, that they be licensed or authorized. Some of these chemicals, pesticides, are pretty nasty stuff. And I think that for a safety standpoint, we'd like to know the people who are applying these have had the proper training, knowledge, and know what they're doing before they apply this. To get this certification fee, the training is free. The license would cost $25 just to get the license.
Representative Meyer?
Yeah.
May I interrupt you
sure.
for a second? Representative Seaton has a question.
Sure.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Referencing Section 6, it appears that we're talking about the CS, and I was wondering whether you'd like me to move the CS before the committee. Well, Section 6 in the original bill is the effective date, so.
That's correct. It is CS.
Are you, yeah.
Yes.
Through the chair, I'd just like to know if you are presenting the CS to us, Representative Meyer.
I'm sorry, the CS is what we prefer, yes.
Yes.
I'd like to move to bring the CS for House Bill 19, version Y, before the committee.
Thank you, Representative Seaton. Objection?
Thank you.
Sir.
Yeah, I apologize. I was referencing the CS. To go on, the fees that we collect, or DEC would collect through the registration and the licensing, will support the department's efforts. As in the past now, the department's efforts to regulate some of these chemicals have been done simply with general funds. And basically this would start up a user fee and help offset some of the general funds. Third and final provision of House Bill 19 would direct the department to promulgate a reasonable public notice requirement that includes a written notice on the application site where the pesticides are being used. Again, we're talking about public areas here, so that if you're walking your dog, or if you have a child, or if yourself are allergic or or asthmatic, it's good to know that this area you're walking into has just been sprayed with whatever, in case you are allergic to it. Again, it's just a right to know. You should have a right to know what's been sprayed in the environment that you're going into. The underlying purpose of House Bill 19 is to create a pesticide program in Alaska that the public can have some confidence in, some faith in, that it's being run fairly to both the business and to the public. Today you're going to hear from various groups. The chairman showed me some of the people who signed up to testify. Some are going to be supportive. Some probably aren't going to be supportive. But I think, as I said, you will hear that some will say we have a right to know what has been sprayed as far as chemicals go and the pesticides. You're going to hear from DEC. I think Kirsten's here to testify. They're going to be supportive because they want to do a better job as far as regulating and enforcing our pesticide requirements. Businesses, some of the businesses probably won't like this because now they're going to have to pay a fee to register their chemical, which in the past, as I said, they haven't been required to do. And, of course, no business likes to incur additional costs. But, again, I don't think we're being excessive. I don't think we're being unfair. We've looked at what other states do. All the other states do require this. The amount that we're asking for is a range, so it could be anywhere from, you know, $10 up to, I think, a maximum $120 is what we have in the bill. So it does allow some flexibility depending upon the use of the pesticide. Mr. Chairman, that's all the comments I have. I'm sure DEC will do a much better job than I have in explaining the bill and the importance of it.
Thank you, Representative Meyer. Do we have questions? Representative Seaton?
Mr. Chairman, I was just wondering, since we've just introduced the CS and we have a number of people online testifying, I was wondering if I could ask the sponsor to run through the changes between the bill that they have and been available online and the CS.
Absolutely.
Mr. Chairman, we'll be happy to do that. If with your permission, I'd like to ask my staff to do that. He's been more involved in the changes from the original version to the CS. Is that okay, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, of course it is. Would you state your name for the record, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Michael Pulowski, and I'll go through section by section to talk about the differences between the original version and the committee substitute. Section 1 in the original bill added receipts from the regulations of pesticides to the list of programs in AS3705146. Those are GF program receipts that could be coming in. Section 1 of the committee substitute adds receipts from both the regulation of pesticides and fees from the licensing of pesticide applicators for the same list of programs. Now, because it's in 3705146, these are receipt-supported services, so they are dedicated to the program. No, they go to the program that is being regulated. Section 2 is a conforming amendment in the CS to Section 1, and that's purposes of accounting. Receipt-supported services have specific statutes that govern the way they are accounted for in the state system. So it's just a conforming amendment. Section 2 of the original House Bill 19 directed the department to charge a $115 annual fee to register pesticides and broadcast chemicals for sale in Alaska. The changes we've made, that provision exists in Section 3 of the committee substitute. And as Representative Meyer described, in talking to businesses and interested groups in chemicals, we felt it was more appropriate to go to a permissive scale that allowed DEC, through regulation, to be able to determine if there is a certain threshold where a chemical that's either new on the market or you don't know what the market will be or has a limited market, to charge less. And so we wanted to give DEC the opportunity to use their discretion, considering that there are, at this point, probably 5,700 different types of chemicals in Alaska that are covered under this proposed legislation. Section 3 also added the licensing fee for pesticide applicators. Now, that is in the same way as the fee on manufacturers. It's a permissive. They may charge it, and it may not exceed $25. Section 3 in the original bill was a conforming amendment to DEC's authority, and you will find that same amendment in Section 4 of the committee substitute. Section 5 of the committee substitute gives the department the ability and the authority to temporarily waive the license requirements that we set up in Section 6. And I'll get into those license requirements in just a second. But the idea being that in the transition phase, in states of a public emergency, the provision that we've set up that applicators in a public place must be licensed by the department, we might not have the opportunity to meet that in a transition phase or in a state of public emergency. So the department needed the ability to waive the licensing requirements on a temporary basis. Section 4 in the original version of House Bill 19 was a very detailed public notice requirement provision, and that had several different exemptions for particular types of chemicals. It had a very strict warning sign. It defined everything about the public notice program in statute. In looking at that, we came to essentially the same concern that we came to over the fees, in that there are, as I said, you know, well over 5,500, 5,700 different chemicals in the state. And trying to legislate in a statutory perspective where and when and how public notice should be done is very difficult when these chemicals are applied in different ways, and any exemption you tried to do for one type of chemical application actually got problematic in that it brought in other chemicals that we might want to include, and that the public would have a very grave concern and want public notice for. So the transition happens in Section 6, which is where, in the committee substitute, we went again to regulation and said to the department, we ask that you promulgate reasonable public notice that includes written on-site notice when pesticides have been applied in a public place. Additionally, this is where we've inserted a provision that says that in order to apply pesticides in a public place, you need to be certified by the department, and that gets back to the public health concern that Representative Meyer described. The final portion in Section 6 is the definition of public place, and that wraps up the differences between the original bill and the committee substitute.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pulaski. Do we have questions for Michael? Co-chair Samuels?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On Section 6, and maybe it's a better question for DEC, or maybe it's getting to the heart of the bill, but a person may not apply a pesticide or broadcast chemical in a public place unless licensed. Weed and feed at a small a yard in front of a small business next to a walkway into their business, you're going to have to license before you apply Roundup or weed and feed. I mean, is there any parameters on, you know, we're not talking about a park or anything, but, you know, a walkway, you've got hanging baskets or something like that going in. If I worked for Conoco in the atrium, for instance.
Through the chair, Representative Samuels, I would prefer to defer that question to DEC.
Okay.
At the same time, that was part of the problematic reason we went to a more permissive regulatory fix, in that the breadth of chemicals and the application, the specific application of those chemicals, did get problematic, and how that fit in, we weren't sure. So,
okay. Thank you.
Further questions, Representative Gatto?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Some chemicals are clearly beneficial. You spray Clorox to rid yourself of a fungus, or what if you are dealing with a fertilizer for various plants? Would they be covered? And but hold that 1 second, because the follow-up question is, and I was thinking of this as you were talking, if you have a smoking area, you really are broadcasting substantial numbers of chemicals. And would that require a posting and a notification in a smoking area? So both of those.
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, I would say this, knowing that DEC is truly the experts when it comes to chemicals and can perhaps follow up. I do not believe that tobacco falls under the definition of a broadcast chemical in statute. Broadcast chemical is a bit of an arcane term that you don't really find in the EPA regulations, which creates some problems with the way the definitions break down the statute, but we have to use Alaska statutes, and since it relates to our statutes, I don't believe that falls in there. The other part is that I believe Clorox and certain fertilizers certainly are covered. Part of the reason being that Clorox, while it is beneficial, while it is a cleaner, at the same time to an asthmatic coming into the area might create problems. To someone that is allergic to Clorox could create problems. Fertilizers certainly carry a lot of different things. The important part being, though, as well, that it is limited to a public place and not an area that is ordinarily restricted to employees or private property that is your residence.
If I can add, you're talking about fertilizing your grass, for example. This does not cover. Now, Representative Samuel's question about if the grass is in the right of way or exactly. Public area, that's something we're going to have DEC help us with.
Additional questions for Mr. Pulaski or Representative Meyer?
I guess Representative Seaton, please. Just following up on, I think, Representative Samuel's comment, the atrium of ConocoPhillips building wouldn't be a public place, would it, under this definition on page 4?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, my own bill may get me fired here, but yes, I would say that would be covered because that is a public place. It's open to the public.
Through follow-up?
Please, Representative Seaton.
And which would that be, A, B, C, or D that would fall into that? I mean, it's not a public accommodation. Apartment or multifamily dwelling is B. Government office or facility is C, and D is outdoor areas. I'm just.
Representative Seaton, through the chair. Again, I'll let DEC answer what their interpretation would be, whether or not that's a public area. But do we have something here?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Seaton. Public accommodation is another one of those terms in Alaska statutes that is phenomenally broad and includes all other public amusement and business establishments subject only to the conditions and limitations established by law and applicable. It covers really any place where it's a business where the public may frequent, is the way I understand the definition. And it's goods or facilities to the general public. That's why we went in as well and said that are not ordinarily restricted to employees, drawing that line of employees beyond this point, general public in this point.
Thank you. Satisfactory?
Yes.
Excellent.
Thanks.
Gentlemen, will you be available? You're going to stay with it. We appreciate your testimony very much.
Thank you.
We do have quite a number of people online, but I think we're going to go to Kristen Ryan, the Director of Environmental Health with DEC. To kind of clarify some of these issues that are.
Good afternoon.
Hi, nice to see you, Kristen.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Kristen Ryan. I'm the Director of Environmental Health for the Department of Environmental Conservation. And as Representative Myers has said, we do support this legislation, and I will answer a few of those questions that have come up. Tobacco is not a registered chemical under FIFRA, which is the Federal Insecticide Rodenticide Act, which is what regulates chemicals in this, and sanitizers such as Clorox bleach would be exempt. We encourage people to use sanitizers like Clorox, and we would not be requiring them to be certified or public notice the use of bleach. So, and yes, and you got the answer that a public accommodation is an extremely broad definition and can include public areas in a business, such as Conoco's atrium. That technically would fall under the definition of a public area. What would not fall under a public area is your private lawn or your warehouse in the back of your business where the public do not frequent. And the bill also lists an exemption for hotels and restaurants. The way DEC would interpret this legislation is a charging a fee of $105 for every pesticide registered in the state. As you've heard, there's about 5,700 registered right now. We expect a significant drop-off from chemicals that no longer want to pay to register if they have to pay a fee, so our fiscal note reflects a 40% decrease. We would initiate a fee waiver process in regulation for limited use products or products that are new to Alaska. They're not sure they have a market yet or not. We do not want to restrict applicators' ability to try new products. Pesticides are not DDT and Agent Orange anymore. They're extremely advanced and meant to target specific species and dissipate in our environment very quickly. So we want to encourage applicators to use new chemicals, and we don't want to hinder their ability. So we would have to establish a waiver process in regulation. If a company approached us saying they want to have their chemical be allowed to be used in Alaska, they don't think they have a business investment yet, we would waive it that first year and see what happens and then readdress it the second year. The certification fee is something that's done for free right now. That people do have to be certified if they're commercial applicators. What this bill would change on how we do our current work is you only have to be certified if you're a commercial applicator. It doesn't matter where you're spraying. It's just if you're making money off spraying. What this would mean is that a business like Home Depot who wants to spray out in their parking lot would have to hire a certified applicator or make their janitor certified to do it, which would cost them $25 and taking a test. multifamily dwellings, people being spraying in hallways in the Mendenhall, for example, would now have to be certified before they did that. And we think that's a good thing, just because that's where probably your most significant exposures are occurring to pesticides is in interior spaces. So that's, to us, a good thing. Public notification would vary in regulation by type of facility. That's one reason why we asked for flexibility in the statute, because it isn't a one-size-fits-all activity. It all depends on what's going on. If you are becoming a new, you're going to rent a new apartment, we could probably have a registration process where when you sign the lease, you let your landlord know, I want to be notified before you spray in my apartment or not. Whereas in a park, it would be a sign on the lamppost or something to warn you that it had occurred. And finally, there would be no impact to farmers and restaurants and hotels, as I've said. Commercial pesticide applicators are concerned that the fees will limit their the amount of chemicals they have access to. But I think with a sufficient waiver process, we can alleviate some of those concerns. And a farmer is private property, so he would not have to change anything.
Excellent. Questions?
I know.
Take a deep breath, Chris. Representative Ledoux?
Could you, through the chair, could you once again define broadcast chemical?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, I actually cannot, off the top of my head, define it for you, but it's a term used in statute that has just been continued to be used. In the department, it's chemicals that are registered through FIFRA as what we consider our pesticides, and some of those are broadcast and some are not, but it's an archaic term that just continues to be used in law.
Can I follow up through the chair? Does it kind of mean that it gets all over? Is that like broadcasts so that it gets on the surroundings?
I can't offer you I'll get back to you with a legal definition.
Let the record show Representative Crawford has joined us. You have a question also?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've been calling this the right to know. If you were going to apply a pesticide to, say, a multifamily dwelling, and one of the persons in that multifamily dwelling objected after you notified, what would be the process then? What would happen? Do you know?
Representative Crawford, through the chair, I would anticipate in a multifamily dwelling, the notification would precede the application. So there would be an opportunity to say, no, do not spray for cockroaches in my apartment. That would be part of the public notification when you signed your lease. You'd have that authority to deny application.
The common areas.
Well, I'm not sure how we would address that. That would have to be a negotiation between the landlord, I think, and his tenants. And some landlords would probably have to decide if they're willing to make that compromise. I don't think DEC would get in the middle of that. I think we would just say, you have to make sure you tell people before you do it. And if they don't want to be exposed to it, then perhaps they need to live somewhere else if you're insistent on spraying.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Crawford. Representative Seaton?
I guess, yes, I had a couple questions. First of all, I think you said $105 on page 3, line 5. It says fee may not exceed $120. Has DEC decided that $105 is the reasonable amount and not the $120?
Representative Seaton, to the chair, yes, I presume the sponsor was trying to give us some leeway so that when things change, maybe in 10 years down the road, we wouldn't have to come back for a legislative amendment. But at the current statute requirements of the pesticide program, a $105 fee we think would be sufficient to replace all the general fund in the program and cover our costs.
Okay, thank you. And follow up?
Yes, of course, Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And I had a question. I mean, I've had a pesticide application license before because we, you know, use some wood preservatives.
Uh-huh.
The big thing is that you can't buy it without having a license. Now, this going to, is this license any different, or is it just a charge for the license? Is it going to require people that sell the chemicals to have a different level of supervision or making sure that they verify that somebody has a license before they sell the chemical to individuals?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, this does not change our current licensing classes or categories. There are 7 categories you can currently be licensed in, and it sounds like you are licensed in the wood preservative category. It does just charge a fee. That is the addition it's adding. But because we expect the number of certified applicators to double because of the public area requirement now that you be certified before you apply in a public area, we would use that fee to cover our costs to train and inspect all these additional certified applicators. But we do not anticipate any changes in how we currently certify. And what was your second half of your question?
Well, I was just wanting to find out if, since this is covering all broadcast chemicals, if are those the same ones that all fall under the current license, or would this require someone in a retail store or wholesale, anything, to require a license before you can purchase a broader array of chemicals than is currently in practice?
Representative, through the chair, the change is that now you'd have to be certified to apply in a public area. It wouldn't change. Not all chemicals are required. You're not required to be certified to buy all chemicals. The ones you were using. But that is not the standard. It all depends on the chemical and how the license. With pesticides, the label is the law. EPA establishes on the label how it can be used, and some say you must be certified. And therefore, that's federal law, and we have to abide by that. But not all chemicals are that way. Many people get around that by buying chemicals from currently certified applicators. They basically have them go buy it for them.
Would it be fair to say, Kristen, then if I was an hourly expediter and you were the applicator, that I could go pick up the chemicals and bring them to you, and you as a certified the applicator could broadcast them out? Is that a fair way to summarize that concern? Okay, thank you. Coacher Samuels, you had a question?
Yeah, a couple. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You explained this to me in my office, but I can't remember what the answer was. When you register the chemical, is it the chemical compound that's in Roundup, or is it the brand name and every brand that competes against any given pesticide, off and cutters and all those various things? Do they all have to register, or is a chemical compound that's probably in all of them have to register?
Representative Samuels, and we had a long discussion about this. It is the product that has, so it will be Roundup that has to pay the fee now, that it is not the product within it. Like glyphosate is actually the active ingredient in Roundup.
Very good.
Thank you. That they have a few active ingredients, but glyphosate's the main one. And so, no, it won't be glyphosate and the other ingredients. It will be Roundup. But let me add a caveat to that. We have spoken with some people that are concerned. They sell flea collars, for example. A flea collar is an insecticide. So they are registered by EPA and therefore fall under these requirements, meaning they'd have to pay the registration fee. We would not charge a separate registration fee for each size of collar, a cat collar and a dog collar. It would be that's one product. And, for example, many
brand of collar.
Different brands, right. It would be the company product. That's one fee. Different sanitizers have different scents. Some people want lemon and some people want raspberry scented sanitizers, but it's still the same product, pretty much, just the scent is different. We would not charge them separate registration fees for every scent.
Okay. And as far as the applicators go, if they break the regulation, what's the penalty?
Representative Samuels, the penalty right now that we can revoke their certification is about our biggest stick at this point. There is no civil fine authority in this program.
Didn't have the certification.
It would be a notice of violation from the department that they have violated Alaskan law.
Okay. And if I could, Mr. Chairman, I'll try to get rid of them all.
At your leisure.
Back to the question that I asked Representative Meyer on the Section 6. the public place regarding like a small business. And I'm not talking about the Park Strip in Anchorage or some place where, you know, a lot of people and it's actually is a public area.
Mm-hmm.
But I work in a business and we don't hire a gardener because we don't care. We're not going to spend any money on a gardener. But there are little flowers walking up the sidewalk into the building itself, and I'm assuming that if they get aphids, that somebody, and I don't know who, goes out and sprays aphid spray on them. That person would now be required, our person would have to go out and get a license in order to take care of our 8 plants. That's regulation-wise, and I realize the reality of it, but uh-huh. regulation-wise, that would be the requirement.
Representative Samuels, we would have to establish, as we are with the registration, a de minimis. We aren't expecting, you know, a very small business who just has, for example, even DEC has a pine tree out front in a pot.
Exactly.
You know, we would not expect that to comply. We're really trying to get large applications, or at least applications that can significantly expose people. We're talking about parking lots where they're spraying for ants. We're talking about in interior space where they're spraying for cockroaches. So through the regulation process, we would have to define some sort of a de minimis that would not need to comply.
Okay, and one final business along the same lines is, as somebody who represents basically a bunch of suburbs in Anchorage, there's a lot of people that work out of their own homes. You know, their businesses, they have a business license there, and you walk up to the door, and you know, they've computer repair, they've got to install things in cars and in their own garages and whatnot, and all of a sudden they're weeding and feeding their yard and they earn a living. This is their business, and the public comes and goes out of the yard way more than they come and go out of my yard. So do you see, picture that being a problem? Has it been a problem in other states?
Representative Samuels, I don't see that as being a problem because, again, the way the definition is written in statute, it says frequently accessed by the public. A small business who doesn't have a large customer base, you know, and we would have to establish probably some number in regulation, would not have to comply.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for Kristen? Representative Olson?
If interior space represents the greatest potential source of exposure, why is there a exemption for the notification for hotels and restaurants?
Representative Olson, through the chair, well, I'll start with restaurants. Restaurants already comply with the food code regulations, and in those regulations there are stipulations about use of chemicals. In restaurants, they're primarily using chemicals to abate pests in the kitchen. Where there's food, and these
not all restaurants, though.
right, exactly. I won't name names.
Thank you, Representative Holson.
And they are already under the food code required not to get the chemical on any food or food surfaces. They are only allowed to use exempt sanitizers on food surfaces and sanitizers that are approved for food contact. So we felt there was sufficient safety built into the food code. Hotels, again, as well, the chance of a long-term exposure there are extremely limited. And people in Alaska aren't living in hotels.
Unless they're in Juneau.
Well, I know. I shouldn't. I'm speaking broadly. and so we didn't see that as a greater risk as multifamily dwellings where you have children on the floor not knowing what's going on.
Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Olson. Representative Ledoux, do you have a question?
Yes, I do. I'm looking at a public place, and I'm wondering, does that even include apartments? You were talking original.
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, it does. It's referencing a public accommodation definition, which is in Statute 18, is very broad. It covers everything pretty much that the public can enter. In regulation, we would have to set some de minimises for some very small businesses.
Follow up, Representative Ledoux?
Yes, but when you lease an apartment, that apartment is yours. I mean, it's not a public accommodation anymore. So I guess I wonder whether or not that an apartment mm-hmm. would be included under a public accommodation.
to respond to Representative Ledoux through the chair, I do think there is sufficient statutory flexibility for DEC to establish some standards there, but you may be right that it's tenuous if we go into the private apartments. What I would propose is that if we are establishing a registration requirement, for example, of an apartment building like the Mendenhall, when you are going to rent the apartment and you say, I want notification before you spray in the hallway, extending it into the apartment isn't that much of a stretch.
Follow up?
But what about a case where somebody might simply rent out a townhouse? Like I've got a townhouse in Anchorage, and I rent that townhouse out. Would that now be a public?
Yes.
Excellent. Any more questions for Kristen? Thank you very much, Kristen. And if you'll stay here till 3, we'd appreciate it just for any follow-ups, unless you're.
Mr. Chairman, I am scheduled to testify on the fast track supplemental, so I will stay as long as I can.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Before we don't have anybody else in the room that wants to testify, so let me just do a little housekeeping. Thank you, Representative Mann. Let me do a little bit of housekeeping. First of all, HB 26, which is a short-term commercial fishing crew member licenses, because of time restraints, doesn't look like we will get to that until Monday, and also because it's 2:30 and we've got quite a lot of online testimony we're going to take, I'm assuming now that we'll hold this bill over until Monday.
Yes,
very likely.
If we have members, I'd like to try to get HB 26 on Friday.
If we have a quorum available,
on
Friday.
Which,
okay. That said, do we have anybody else in the room that would like to testify? Okay. Terrific. We're going to go online. Let's go to Delta Junction first, please, to Jane Hamilton.
Okay. We're here. There's Jane.
Hi, Jane. State your name for the record, please.
My name is Jane Hamilton. I'm the executive director of the Alaska Farm Bureau. And the concern that the Farm Bureau has is over the fee. And as was stated previously, they currently pay nothing. And it's the way we understand it that the manufacturer has to register, like the Roundup manufacturer would have to register his chemical. And we're hearing from a lot of the chemical companies who are saying that they could not afford to register their chemicals because the market is so small here in the state that they wouldn't register their chemical and therefore would not be available. And if you had some left over from the previous year, it would then be illegal to use that chemical. And so I just would like to say that our concern is over the fee. To go from zero to $105 is a pretty dramatic increase. And the sponsor's statement points out that the fees range from $15 per chemical in Missouri to $750 per chemical in California. And so I do believe that the fee is rather high.
All right. Thank you, Jane. Do you have any other points?
No.
Are there any questions for Jane? Jane, while Kristen is here, maybe you could address that for us, just so you can get an answer. And would you tell us how you arrived at that rate for registration, please, Kristen?
Mr. Chairman, we arrived at that rate by determining what it would cost to implement the program and then determining what the fees would be needed to cover those costs by supplementing all GF in the program.
Okay. All right, Jane, so that's the rationale.
If I could add.
Yes, please, go ahead.
And I mentioned this, it would not be illegal to use a product up that you had registered the year before, even if you had not paid the fee. But also, we would want to set a de minimis for experimental use, first-time use for chemicals that don't have a market up here yet. We aren't wanting to hinder the chemicals available to farmers or commercial applicators.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Jane, thank you very much for your testimony. Can we go
You're
next
welcome.
To Matt Sue to Shauna Larson, please?
Yes, thank you. This is Shauna Larson and Sedidat Kemakha. I'm an Athabascan from Chickaloon Village and Sukhbiat from the village of Port Graham. I'm also from Chickaloon on my father's side. I'm here today representing Indigenous Environmental Network. My title is the Environmental Justice Coordinator, so I work with communities and tribes around the state that are impacted by toxics. And I'm also here today as a resident of Palmer. We know that pesticides are linked to serious health problems, including certain cancers, reduced fertility, birth defects, neurological impairment, asthma, and endocrine disruption. I believe that citizens of Alaska have the right to know where, when, and what toxic pesticides are being sprayed so that they can avoid exposure in public places. As was stated, it didn't sound like agricultural areas would be included in this, but it is certainly a concern for those of us that live out here in the valley and know that there's constant spraying going on during the summer months. Children are particularly vulnerable to the toxic effects of pesticides, and of course this is a concern to me because I do have two small children, and we do things like berry picking. Sometimes it's alongside the road, sometimes it's wherever we can find berries. It is part of our traditional culture as an Alaska Native person, so this is a concern, and I would certainly avoid these areas if I knew that they had been recently sprayed. Despite the known risks, we have no accurate information on which pesticides are used, where, when, and what amounts. So as I stated before, if we knew where pesticides were being sprayed, we would certainly avoid those areas, especially with my small children. I thought that it was interesting, the issue that was brought up before for apartment complexes. If I was going to move into a townhouse or into an apartment complex that had been sprayed with my small child, I would certainly want to have that notification because my baby crawls around on the floor, eats things off of the floor, does, things that you can't often stop small children from doing. And I would certainly want to know what types of exposures, especially knowing that these pesticides are linked to serious health problems. I believe that there is a broad base of support for pesticide use reporting, including support from the medical community, subsistence food users, parents, workers, and environmental advocates, all those categories, which most of those categories I fall under. So I'm just asking today to please consider implementing the fee for registration, but also notifying citizens like myself and, people like me that are parents that are concerned for the health of our children and for the health of ourselves. Thank you very much.
Shauna, thank you very much. And your sentiments echo a lot of the emails that we received, which are in our packets. And it's a public's right to know about pesticide application. Children, elderly people, and those with chronic illnesses is a quote that I lifted from Pam Miller, who's the executive director of Alaska Community Action on Toxics. So we appreciate your sentiment very much. Thank you for your testimony. Next, we're going to go to the off-net, please, to Dr. Grove. Have Dr. Grove and Dr. Langer. Dr. Grove?
Yes.
Good afternoon, sir. Please state your name for the record.
For the record, my name is Adam Grove. I'm a naturopathic physician in Anchorage, Alaska. Thank you, Representative Miller, for your work on this this topic. I think this is a very important topic. I was involved when the city of Anchorage went through this process, and I feel very strongly about the use of pesticides because as a primary care physician, I see a lot of children in my practice, and I've come to appreciate that both as a father and as a doctor, we have a responsibility to protect these children. There are many things we can't prevent for children, and so we need to focus on those we can, and pesticides is one of these very important things that we need to be able to pay some attention toward. And notification, such as this bill is proposing, empowers us as parents, teachers, store owners, et cetera, to protect our future, our children. And I thought it was interesting, the issue of the smoking areas came up, and I see that as actually a good analogy. Smoking areas are labeled. We can avoid them if we don't want to be exposed to smoke. Smoke is not a broadcast chemical, but that same idea applies here. Giving people information empowers them to make choices. And so my concerns about pesticides focus on their toxic effects. Pesticides kill bugs because they're toxic. That's the way they work. They're toxic to humans as well. Fortunately, humans tend to be larger than most bugs, so the effect is less or delayed. However, the toxic effects have been shown in both human and animal studies to accumulate, and studies on pesticides, as far as I know, are without exception conducted in ideal lab conditions without the effect of environmental factors such as rain, heat, and these chemicals are also not studied in combination with each other or with the adjuvants which are used in their application. And so the toxic effects on children are primarily either neurotoxic or endocrine disrupting in nature. So we see children with neurological diseases with manifesting things as convulsions, loss of sensation, brain changes, and endocrine changes resulting in the earlier onset of puberty, genital malformations in babies, and infertility. And the list goes on and on. And, of course, kids are more at risk due to the fact that they're closer to the ground, as Shauna Larson was saying, where chemicals are provided. They tend to put their hands in their mouths. Their lower body weight means their dose per pound is much greater than in adults. And kids are also more susceptible to toxic effects because their organ systems are rapidly developing and those cells are more liable to disruption. And speaking of cost, again, I think this registration cost is a great idea because in 1997, a study was done, a nationwide study, that put the cost of pediatric disease of environmental origin at anywhere from $9 to $18 billion in 1 year. So there's a tremendous cost that we incur by the use of pesticides, and I think it's very appropriate that the companies manufacturing these and the people applying these bear some of the burden of that cost. So I urge you not to eliminate the cost provisions, and also urge you not to exempt any public space such as restaurants or hotels. And as Kristen Ryan from DEC testified, this indoor exposure is the most significant. And what of the workers who work there 8 to 12 hours per day? That's significant. I also urge you to legislate these notification requirements rather than turn them over to the DEC for regulation. I think legislation will give us a much stronger push here with these regulations. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Grove. Does anybody have any questions for the doctor? Doctor, thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate it greatly.
Thank you.
Next, we'd like to hear from Dr. Langer.
This is Birgit Langer. I'm a doctor here in Anchorage and also a board member at ACAT.
Please,
can you hear me?
Please go ahead, doctor.
Okay. I'm calling in support of House Bill 19, and in particular for improved notification. I think that's an area we really need to focus on so that citizens are able to make informed choices about where they go and what they're exposed to. I wanted to address a comment that was made earlier about how currently, pesticides that are used are no longer as dangerous as they have been in the past. There was a comment about Agent Orange, and I just wanted to make a note that Weed and Feed actually has 2,4-D in it, which is a component of Agent Orange. So there's still a lot of the common pesticides in use have some quite toxic components in them. Getting back to the House bill, again, as similar to Dr. Grove, as a physician, I have also high concerns about the impact that pesticides have on human health, on the endocrine system, the nervous system, the immune system, the reproductive system. We see that certain pesticides can have estrogen-mimicking effects and can contribute to breast cancer, miscarriages, developmental problems in infants. And I think a lot of times people think that it's larger quantities that are harmful, but there have been a number of recent studies indicating that even small quantities of chemicals or low-level exposures can be quite damaging over time. And just from personal experience, I have had several patients who have had health problems related to exposure to pesticides and herbicides. One patient in particular was exposed to pesticide applied to a lawn nearby, ended up in the hospital with a severe asthma attack. Another patient, again, exposed to pesticides without knowing and ended up in the hospital with an allergic attack and hives. And so if these people were aware that the pesticides were being applied, they could stay indoors, avoid that area, avoid that park or whatever location where that pesticide was applied, and prevent any harm to themselves. So as we look in medicine, the first and easiest thing for us to do is prevention of illness, and part of prevention is avoidance. Once someone is ill, it's a much more difficult task to treat them. So I'm strongly in favor of House Bill 19. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Dr. Langer. Any questions for the doctor? Dr. Langer, thank you very much for your testimony this afternoon. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we'd like to go to Ruth McHenry. Ruth, are you with us?
Yes, Yes, I am.
Please state your name for the record and begin.
My name is Ruth McHenry, and I live in Kenny Lake, and I want to thank you for this opportunity to speak about HB 19. Earlier today, I faxed written comments to Representative Ramirez's office, so I'll make my testimony brief. I want to be able to choose whether to go where pesticides have been used for the same reasons that I want to be able to choose whether the foods I eat have, say, saturated fats in them. With pesticides, as with food ingredients, there are differing opinions about health risks. Since no one cares as much about my health as I do, I want to be able to make my own decisions. I can do that only if the state requires pesticide application notices, just as the federal government requires food content labels. Given that information, I might make one decision, and you might make another, and that's fine. I would like you to add the terms public lands, because that is where many of us in rural Alaska get much of our food. And, you know, I still can't quite understand why you would exempt restaurants and motels. Chemicals might be present in carpets in restaurants, but not in food. And as we learned in the unfortunate Roadway Inn fire, people do live for long term in hotels. And finally, because chemicals persist for so long in our climate, please require that outdoor signs remain up for a longer period than 48 hours after application. We everyday Alaskans, unlike chemical manufacturers, we everyday Alaskans are your constituents. Our health and our safety are important, and we hope that you will give a due pass to a strong version of HB 19. Thank you again.
Thank you very much, Ruth. Does anybody have any questions for Ms. McHenry? Ruth, thank you very much for your testimony today. We appreciate that. Next, we're going to go to Anchorage to Ken Perry. Ken, I've read your correspondence that you forwarded to us, and we're very glad to have you this afternoon to present a perspective on HB 19. Please, are you with us?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Please feel free. We'll let you run as long as you want. We've got about 15 more minutes before we need to turn the room over, and I know you've got quite a number of issues to discuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. But because of the situation, I will try to be brief and just offer myself more for questions. I am Ken Perry, president of Paratex Pied Piper Pest Control, established originally in Ketchikan 41 years ago. Personally, I was born and raised in Fairbanks and have raised five children in Alaska. I share these details only to establish our long-term knowledge of pesticides and their use in our state and my personal love and concern for the pristine environment and my children's health that transcends pecuniary interests. On the issue of pesticide registration and certified applicator fees, I have submitted testimony by email to all of you that explains the inherent danger of attempting to require the manufacturers to pay for the ADEC pesticide program. From a business standpoint, our rare situation here demands more alternatives in the area of chemicals rather than less. While there are many anecdotal stories floating around about certain pesticides, it is in fact not these, but the newer, less toxic products that will not find the way to our market. As an example, if I request a manufacturer to register a new product for me to try out in our special temperatures, and the bottle or can costs $25 to $100, why should they pay virtually any amount or beg for a variance to register it one time here? In fact, it will be easier for our industry to keep using older pesticides, which may continue to be registered, than even go through the effort of begging the new label to register here, efforts which have failed already on several occasions because of the high environmental activism in this state. The same will be true of many specialty products that residents of Alaska may desire to purchase, but will not be able to when the manufacturer refuses to register it here. Again, this includes disinfectants, fungicides, paints, specialty plant and animal products, and a host of other chemicals that fall under the broad label of pesticides. On the issue of public notification, This legislation is extremely short-sighted as to the real results and intent of such a law. Alaska has always been at the forefront of personal liberties and property rights compared to other states. This unscientific demand is a violation of the rights of every person who chooses to use a federally regulated pesticide on his or her private property. I would equate it with demanding that every person who ventures outside in Alaska during our mosquito-filled summers be required to hang an 8.5 by 11 sign on their back saying, "Stay away from me, I use deep woods off." In actual scientific fact, the public is far more likely to contact a cold or flu virus from the doorknob he touches than a now dried pesticide applied to a baseboard, crack, or crevice, or the discreetly placed rodenticide bait station. And while we fully support any individual's right to know what chemicals they may come into contact with, it should be incumbent upon them to ask if they desire to know. If in the future a significant number of such requests lead to a burden on property owners, I'm sure you will see them posting signs stating they do not use pesticides. In this case, they decide what is posted on their property, not the state. In closing, let me correct any misunderstanding that this bill as written will not result in an increased demand on the current budget concerns of the state of Alaska. The increased regulation and enforcement cannot be offset by the actual dollars that the sponsors have attempted to attain. There are two very big unknowns at stake here. The first is the actual amount of registration and certification fees that may be collected in the future. At this time, the dollar amounts are anyone's guess. But I am in touch with both the pest control industry and the manufacturers, and I have a list of the current registrations. And I swear honestly to you today that I am not confident in the estimates coming from the proponents. The second unknown has not yet even been addressed. That is the fact that the larger portion of the pesticide program in Alaska is paid for by federal sharing funds. We are glued to events currently affecting the federal budget, and there is no way of saying with any certainty that these funds will continue to be available at current levels. Any new regulations imposed now will have to be assumed by higher state contributions if federal funds do diminish. It would be wise to consider carefully the necessity of what we commit ourselves to now and how we may be required to pay for them later. I thank the committee for the opportunity to speak, and I'm at your disposal for any questions or comments.
Thank you, Mr. Perry. Your testimony was very articulate. Do members of the committee have questions for Mr. Perry? I believe, Mr. Perry, that everybody has turned and has been reviewing some of your your email correspondence. So we appreciate the background and the oral testimony as well. Thank you very much today, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome. Next, can we go to Arndt von Hippel, please? Arndt, are you there?
Yes, sir. My name is Arndt von Hippel. I'm a retired heart surgeon. I retired a couple of years after being sprayed by persons known to me and known to you who, while I was asleep after a night of working steadily all night, sprayed vigorously in my window in the process of trying to get the neighbor's trees taken care of. This resulted in a very severe angina that I'd never had before. I never had any angina before. This resulted in a deterioration of my health, and a couple of years later, may or may not have related to the fact that I had to undergo major coronary repairs and retire. I would point out that at this time, I had been previous to this time, I had been the only heart surgeon in Alaska for 7 years, so that the fact that these people go around spraying in this fashion is hardly a safe thing to do if you only have one heart surgeon in Alaska, and I've had arguments with these folks on and on forever. This material that is sprayed in Alaska is not safe. We're in a very primitive state, in a harmful state in the application of toxics, and in general, pesticides in Alaska do far more harm than good. And, for example, if you have a problem that you think aphids should be cured, which is the one that nearly wiped me out, all you need to do is spray yourself, to spray some slightly soapy water, and that drowns the aphids since it reduces the surface tension in the water. Furthermore, these folks put in some really nasty stuff because their only tools being a few toxic pesticides. They obviously get overused, but they... for example, eliminate nests of yellow jackets with very powerful stuff, when all you really need to do, in my experience, is give them a shot of bear spray. Because at that point, with some of the yellow jackets smelling bad, they go into the nest, and everybody who smells different is killing everybody who smells different, and the whole nest is cleaned up. When pesticide people do spray, they almost always violate the label, which means that their licenses should be revoked according to federal statutes. What do I mean by that? Well, the fact, for example, is that if you spray the finer particles would be airborne for about 20 minutes, and if you got a 5-mile-an-hour wind, that means that they're over a mile and a half downwind by the time they settle. If I have a licensed gun, should I just notify my neighbors that when I'll be shooting? That doesn't make it okay, and I don't think that's okay if people have licensed pesticide applicators who decide that this might be useful and decide to go ahead and use it, and when they got a conflict of interest. Obviously, they were pushing it heavily for spruce beetles. It never did any good. They were pushing it heavily for leaf miners. It never did any good. And those who pay for regular spraying frequently, in addition, pay with their lives. We have one Midtown cancer cluster at the present time in Anchorage that looks like it may be a major cancer epidemic, but because the homeowners are worried about their real estate values, they've asked us not to look into it. Spraying leaves, toxic residues, dirty cans and hoses that too often get dumped and washed in local streams and sewers, and I've seen and smelled such. I think that the state of the art is so primitive that it reminds me of the state of the art in medicine in the late 1800s when, for example, Charles Darwin's father died of the treatment of gout, not of gout. And I think these people are putting on stuff that is way too toxic. I disagree with the lady who says there are studies of effective and brief presence. These are not studies that are available in Alaska. I'm not aware of anything like that. And it would take a very major study to do that, and they haven't done those studies. There are very many toxic things, and there hardly ever is anything except an ornamental or a what I would call a frivolous use for spraying them. Thank you very much for listening.
All right, thank you very much. Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Von Hippel? Thank you very much for your testimony, Art, and we hope that you're able to sustain your good health now. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Next, Pam, I've already quoted you. You're obviously a pro with the Alaska Community Action on Toxins. Are you there, please?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, do your best.
I'm having a little trouble with my voice, so I will do my best. I provided written testimony. For the record, co-chairs Ramirez, Samuels, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today concerning House Bill 19. And I'll keep my statement short here, and you do have my written statement, so I'll just emphasize a few points. I'd like to point out that the National Research Council has stated that pesticides are perhaps the only toxic substances that are purposefully applied to the environment. And legally, pesticides are supposed to be regulated so that they do not cause unreasonable adverse effects or harm. But this does not mean that pesticides are safe. Registered pesticides are known to cause cancer, genetic damage, birth defects, miscarriages, liver and kidney damage, and others have spoken about neurological damage and endocrine effects. And less than 10% of the pesticides in common use have been adequately tested for hazards. Our organization has done extensive research on the health effects of pesticides using peer-reviewed scientific and medical literature. And I'll just emphasize one point. For example, I include in my statement the herbicide glyphosate, which is the active chemical ingredient in the commonly used herbicide Roundup, has associations with congenital malformations or birth defects. This was a study just done last year, and yet Roundup remains on the market, and Monsanto touts it as probably the safest pesticide out there for common use. So I'd certainly like to contradict, unfortunately, what Kristen Ryan stated earlier about pesticides being extremely advanced, that they dissipate quickly. I think the scientific evidence, the medical literature, simply does not support that statement. As others have stated, Alaska is the only state that does not require a fee for pesticide registration, and I would simply say that This is a modest fee, and the bill is fiscally positive and provides a direct and measurable benefit to the public by supporting DEC's pesticide program to more effectively conduct its work. So in closing, thank you again for the opportunity and for your careful consideration of the merits of this bill, and I'd be happy to try to answer any further questions.
Thank you very much, Pam. Does anybody have any questions for Ms. Miller? We don't have any questions here, Pam, and your letter is in our packet. We've read it. Thank you very much. We are about 3 minutes to three. We have three more speakers, Emily Nenon, Laura Monfort, and Shannon Kuhn. Emily, you're next. If you'd like to be brief, we've got about 3 minutes. We have to vacate the room at 3 o'clock for a Fish and Game subcommittee meeting.
I can take about 30 seconds.
You got it.
All right. Chair Ramros, Co-Chair Samuels, and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Emily Nenon. I am the Alaska Government Relations Director for the American Cancer Society. And the American Cancer Society is supporting this bill. We see this legislation as an important step in protecting the health of Alaskans. I've done some looking into this kind of legislation in other states and discovered that the American Cancer Society has supported similar legislation around the country over the last 5 to 10 years. And in looking at what's going on in other states, I recognize that this kind of basic regulation is long overdue here in Alaska. We also feel that the public notification called for in this bill is a critical first step in raising awareness of pesticide and the broadcast chemical use. The one piece that is not in this bill that we see as sort of the next step after this would be some kind of a tracking mechanism. We look forward to that somewhere down the line. But for right now, we do request the committee's support of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Emily. We appreciate it a lot. Shannon, I believe that we've got your written testimony here, and I think we're going to close public testimony on this. Pardon me?
Take this last
time. I'm going to try and take that. Laura, are you with us?
I am.
Can you go ahead, and we're right up against our... We're right up against our time. Can you go ahead, please?
Yes. My name is Laura Monfort. In 1992, I was a nurse, a soldier, a wife, and a mother. In 1992, I was almost killed and very severely poisoned by exposure to multiple pesticides that were considered safe and are still claimed to be safe and used for many years. Along with permanent brain damage and cognitive disturbances, I also developed initially sensitivity to a few chemicals, and currently, over time, almost all man-made chemicals. I think it is important to understand that each of us, whether an unborn child all the way to the elderly, carry a toxic load of all the chemicals and toxins that we have ever inhaled, absorbed, or ingested throughout our lifetime. Many of these toxins stay with us for years, days, accumulating and reacting. Each one of these chemicals and toxins needs to be detoxified by every cell in our body. Pesticides are designed to kill. That's already been commented. We know that. They also accumulate. We also know that. And that accumulation is measurable in the air, especially stagnated rooms, inside rooms. The estimate currently is that between 15 and 25% of the population is chemically sensitive. That sensitivity is induced by the proliferation of so many thousands of chemicals that are in our food, our water, our buildings, our clothing, and just about everywhere. Many people are not even aware that their sensitivities exist, let alone that they are specific or that are caused by multiple chemicals. So they cannot protect themselves by limiting their exposure. So they do not protect themselves. It is a true tragedy that our environment and our public buildings and public space and offices become places of poisoning instead of leaving a positive impact. It is a poisoning that can be prevented, and if it not prevented, at least it gives people and knowledgeable medical personnel a probable cause of illness that can be much more quickly recognized and addressed appropriately. I want to comment that the main two pesticide poisons that almost killed me, one of them was malathion and organophosphate, the basis of which continues to be used today, and organochlorines, one of which is chlorine, also known as Clorox, which turns into a gas. The death toll and destruction from chlorine itself, the chlorine gas, in World War II is well known. There are much safer, more effective cleansers, and the current new pesticides are not at all less toxic, nor are they less damaging to our health. There is proof, less documentation of the damage and the impact. The detox pathway within our body for the organophosphates and the permethrins, which are the newer ones today, is, I believe, to be the same. It severely depletes the glutathione levels in our body, and it leaves our bodies open for poisoning that cannot be detoxified. The damage is more severe, it is more chronic, and it is more deadly. And unfortunately, it will be the legacy that we leave for our children. I absolutely support the registration of the pesticides and notification of the pesticides in public use in public places, as well as public lands, and I appreciate you listening to my support.
Laura, thank you very much for your testimony. If that's written, I would encourage you to fax it to us through the LIO there. People of the Resource Committee, we have one more person. Shannon, I have a note here that your statement is written. Do you wish to testify before the committee?
Yes, please.
Okay, this will be our last person, so I'll just beg your indulgence a little bit for a few extra minutes, then we'll have an opportunity to close public testimony on this. Shannon, go ahead, please.
Okay, for the record, my name is Shannon Kuhn, and I'm with Alaska Youth for Environmental Action.
Okay.
I would like to start by thanking Representative Samuels and Representative Ramros, as well as the rest of the House Resources Committee, for giving me the opportunity to speak today. I would also like to thank Representative Kevin Meyer for introducing this crucial bill. As a voter in Representative Meyer's district, I've been continually impressed by his unwavering dedication and commitment to HB 19. Every summer, thousands of youth from all over the state flock to community parks. Our beautiful hanging baskets and manicured lawns lure citizens outside to admire them. Park strips are always crowded with everything from picnics to impromptu games of frisbee. Team sports such as soccer bring entire families out to the fields to cheer their loved ones on. However, during these precious moments, we are unwittingly being exposed to many pesticides, from the chemicals sprayed on the flowers to the weed killers on the grass. Children are more susceptible to these toxic chemicals than adults, as we've heard many times today, as they frequently put things in their mouth, such as contaminated grass. They are at a higher risk of being exposed to these chemicals. Studies have shown that pesticide-exposed children have impaired stamina, coordination, memory, and capacity to represent familiar subjects and drawings. However, adults are also negatively affected by exposure to pesticides. I've been researching common active ingredients in well-known pesticide treatments and have discovered that chemicals considered as some of the safest by the EPA are actually known and suspected human carcinogens. Based on the need to protect Alaskans' health, there should be public on-site notification anytime pesticides are sprayed. We have the right to know which pesticides are being used in the places we live, work, and play, as well as where and when spraying occurs and in what amounts. This is extremely important. Please support House Bill 19 and help ensure the health and safety of Alaskans everywhere. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. With that, we're going to close public testimony. We are not likely to have. Did anybody have any questions for this young lady? All right, thank you very much. We appreciate it very much, Shannon. We're going to close public testimony. I don't believe we're going to have a quorum on Friday, so we resources will meet next Monday. Representative Seaton, you had something?
Yes, I did. Thank you. Resources and State Affairs has common jurisdiction over the Alaska Coastal Zone Management Program. And we are having a hearing tomorrow morning at 8 to 10. We'll have the administration and representatives of six coastal districts explaining the implementation and problems with implementation of House Bill 191, which we passed in 2003. So I urge the members of resources to come visit with us in State Affairs and have that oversight hearing. This is not revisiting what we passed, but looking at the implementation and problems of implementation. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Seaton. And Co-Chair Samuels, did you have something?
No, sir.
Nope. Anybody else have any closing comments? Perfect. We're adjourned. Thank you very much.
Is it State Affairs or CRA?
State.